This is episode 221, recorded September 15th, 2014.
Indeed it is, Aquariumaxers. Thank you for joining us. We've got a lot of contributors today.
Which is great. So we've got Robert in Tallahassee, Florida, Adam in Santa Rosa, California, Sean in Asheville, North Carolina, Matt, who we haven't heard from in a while, in Perth, Australia, and I don't know if I'm saying this name correctly or not, so please feel free to correct me if I'm not. It's spelled X-A-K, so I don't know if that's an alternate spelling of Zach or if it's supposed to be something different, so I apologize if I'm butchering your name.
But we're going
to
go with Zach.
We're going to go with Zach for today, because I don't know.
And we have a son named Xander who spells his with an X.
So yeah, so we've got Zach from Atlanta, Georgia, and Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Mm-hmm. So thank you, everybody, for contributing. Well, that's exciting.
So, first...
Robert.
From Florida.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I just listened to podcast 219. I'm surprised you didn't repair the fixture. There isn't much that can go wrong with them that can't be repaired. Aquarium fixtures are expensive enough that you can repair them for much less than you can replace them. I find eBay to be a good source to buy ballasts.
See, I should have looked into that. I definitely should have done that. I don't know why I didn't.
Well, part of it is because they're going to stop making the bulbs soon and you wanted to get a different fixture because it's harder to find the bulbs now.
It has been
harder. There's not much point in fixing the fixture if they don't sell the bulbs for it.
It's been harder to find that bulb in our area locally. It's probably easier to find it on eBay.
And then you have to pay shipping for a light bulb, which is like through the roof because it's glass.
Yeah, well,
that's why you didn't. I'll tell you that. But if this one breaks, we can fix this one.
Yeah, that's true. But that's a good point, though. It's good to bring that up. I did think about retrofitting it with a different type of fixture. A lot of times you can find retrofit kits that you'll fit into most fixtures, and you can lengthen them out or shorten them.
Mm-hmm.
The part that's inside so that you can fit a variety of different bulbs in it. That sometimes can be done, and that did cross my mind, but I think I was sort of in panic mode. Like, the tank has been without light for 3 days because it died like right before Labor Day weekend.
So we couldn't get anything
done. We had a crazy busy weekend, and I figured the plants would be okay for a few days, but then I thought, okay, they're not going to be okay anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
we just wanted to get it done.
Yeah, but that's a very good point. Thank you for bringing that up. I think that's important to remember. So, mm-hmm.
Okay, so next we have Adam in Santa Rosa, California. And he says, over the past year, I have started selling my extra plants on eBay. Some of them have been grown in wall-step-type tanks outside in the summer. This morning, I got an order for some glossostigma
mm-hmm.
from an individual in Hawaii. I seem to remember you saying that there are a lot of restrictions on what can and can't be shipped to Hawaii. Are these plants banned altogether, or do I just need to do some additional paperwork? Any insight would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, and I did send Adam an email. Hopefully it was helpful. Since this was sort of time-sensitive, mm-hmm. he had an order that he needed to get out. He said, basically, to my recollection, to send anything into Hawaii plant-wise, you need a phytosanitary certificate.
And how do you get that?
You need a certified, like, a USDA facility needs to look at it.
Is that like what we did when we shipped them out? At the airport?
Kind of like that. And I don't think we needed a phytosanitary certificate. I just think we needed a stamp. Is from what I remember.
So it's a little different.
A little different, but kind of something like that. And they need to inspect it, and they need to get do the certificate, which costs money.
And then do you mail the certificate with
the plants in the box?
And
yeah,
they open it on the Hawaii end, and they read it, probably?
I think that's what happens, yeah.
So where do you find out where the USDA offices are to get that? How do you find that out?
If you go to the website, it's easy. It helps you find out
where
the
like
one closest to you.
Is that like USDA org, com, net, what, do you remember?
I think it's USDA.gov.
You can probably just Google it, huh?
Yeah. It's been a while since I looked it up, but I've gotten some certifications of various, whatever, I can't remember what all I've done. A few things in that vein.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the best way. I think it's USDA.gov, and you go there, and it has a finder for a place you can do that kind of stuff. But the phytosanitary certificates are typically fairly expensive. So if you're doing it, you usually want to do it for a larger order.
Or built it into your price plan. For the plants.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. That's why I'm saying you do want to do a larger mm-hmm. order. Because if you're just doing one small order of a plant, or just one kind, It's usually not worth it to get a phytosanitary certificate.
How much are they?
It costs so much. I don't remember, but it's a fair bit.
Fairly hefty.
From what I recall.
Like hundreds of dollars? Or
no, but enough that $50? You don't want like to buy $5 plants with it.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember how much it is, though. But, yeah, for us in Hawaii, all we had to do when we were shipping out was go to the USDA facility that was near the airport, which we would do fairly often. It was like an hour
from
our
house.
It was
on the airport grounds.
Yeah, but usually we had to go down there to buy stuff. You know, if we were going shopping, we were going down there anyway. So we would combine that with another trip and just go to the airport where they had a USDA facility, and they got to recognize us. And
they did.
We'd
go
in there, bring our plants, and they'd inspect them. And once in a while, we'd like find a snail on it or something and had to pull it off, but it wasn't that common. And then they would certify us, stamp us, and we'd be ready to go.
And then we went to the post office, mm-hmm. which they had right there. They had one.
I think we had to provide a list of the plants or mm-hmm. something that were in the package.
What
too,
was in the package?
Like the species, and so they had to write it down. And, you know, I sold a lot of stuff that I sold there was Java ferns. Of
That's
different
true.
Types, like, but not just that. I mean, I sold other things too, various things, but that was a lot of it because I had this tank full of like lace Java fern, and I'd grow driftwood on it, and then I'd sell the whole business altogether for a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then people would just drop it into their tank already grown. Okay, so.
So look up USDA.
Yeah, that might help. No, this isn't working. We're trying to look at Sean's thing here, but it's not working. Hold on just a second. Okay, well, we were going to talk about Sean in North Carolina's tank. He's doing a rebuild of his tank, basically. He was restarting the substrate and everything. But
technology has thwarted us.
Yeah, we're having trouble accessing the pictures. We're going to talk about it and stuff.
We'll see if we can do that later.
Yeah. You know,
if we can get it to work, we'll put them up.
Yep. So, sorry, Sean, but good luck with the build, and we hope it works out.
Okay, so let's go to Australia and Matt.
Okay.
He says, Perth Cichlid Society has a fish foster...
Wait just a second. I love that he says that. You got to say
that,
too.
Okay, but I can't say it right. You got to say it.
Oh, I can't say it right either.
Well, you say it better than I do.
He says, g'day.
Yeah, see, I can't.
Well, no, I just
I'm
love
not
that.
Very good at Australian accent.
Well, I'm not cool.
I always end up, like,
with it either.
Going too Cockney.
I just love the fact that it's there.
I love the fact that it's there, too. I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
It would be neat to go
to
Australia sometime. Okay. Excuse me. He says, Perth Cichlid Society has a fish foster program, so I'm going to offload my Rock Lake cichlids into that. It is great because it means I can change up a tank and still know my old fish will find good homes.
That is a good system.
Mm-hmm. That is nice.
Yeah.
Do they adopt out the fosters, too? So, like, if you're looking for fish, or do they just take them in?
That's a good question. If they go directly to a new owner, or if they have interim owners, is that what you're asking?
It's usually what foster means.
It
but
is,
I don't know
usually.
If it means that in context of a fish.
Yeah, I don't know either. Good question.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice, maybe, to hear more about that. See how it works. I know that... locally here, we've got a system where we can go into our, there's basically it's Utah Aquatics website.
It's like a club.
You can post things there if you're, you have fish you want to find a new home for. Usually people sell them, but sometimes they just say, I'm giving these away, you know, and that works fairly well too. But it's, most of the fishy people around there go in there once in a while, so that works out pretty well. So it is a good system because then you know it's not just some random person. Like, some pet stores will take fish, but you don't know who's going to get them.
Right.
So this is a good method. So he's going to find new homes for his Rock Lake cichlid so he can do what?
He says, I'm going to go full discus. The plan is to make both my tanks discus tanks. The 4-foot will have 4 discus and 4 peppermint bristle nose. The 6-foot will have 6 discus plus the clown loaches and 2 fire mouths I have.
Oh, 10 discus.
What, did I not say 10 discus?
Yeah, I said 6. Because of
oh,
because
I said 6-foot yeah. tank. Oh, sorry, okay. There's 4 in the 4-foot tank. There's not 6 in the 6-foot tank.
That's okay.
I'm going to sell this... let me try that again. I'm going to sell the silver shark. Is that the alliteration? I guess sh and sl is not quite the same, but they're all S's. And I had a hard time saying it, so you get the award. Okay. I'm going to sell the silver. Maybe we should name it the Trip Up Kelly when she's trying to talk award.
Okay.
I'm going to sell the silver shark back to the fish store as I feel they are too active for their mild-mannered discus.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good choice.
So, discus like plants, and I like low power bills, so I'm going LED. What LED light fixture would you recommend for a planted discus tank? I will need one for my 6-foot tank and my 4-foot tank.
Okay.
Please note, only need one for each tank. You won't need 6 in the 6-foot tank or 4 in the 4-foot tank.
And it also depends. Sometimes with the longer tanks, they have... sometimes you have to put 2 fixtures on them.
Oh, now like you messed.
But not always. It depends. it depends. Some of them are just fine with, you know, the longer fixture. But LEDs, I've experimented with those a bit, but I have not gone for the high-end planted LEDs yet. I've done, like the one we have on the goldfish tank is an LED fixture. It's a Marineland Double Bright. It's a deep tank. It's a 37 high.
We only have Anubias in there, don't we?
But that's all we grow in there.
So they don't need that.
They don't need
very
much.
Light.
And they do fine in there. They do quite well in there. But
they flower.
Yeah. I mean, they're Anubias, you know. They do well in your closet, pretty much. But they do well with that light. But you can also see the fish nicely. We don't get a lot of algae growth in that tank. It's nice. But I would say that's about the extent of plantedness and LEDs that we've done.
Well, what's on the new one?
That's not LED, that's T5s.
Oh, that's T5s. Okay. Yeah.
And we've got, let's see what else. Got a couple just normal output fluorescents. We've got some compact fluorescents, and we've had various other fixtures, but the only other LED fixture, I got one that I tried out and took back to the store because I didn't think it was going to be bright enough. And then we've got that one on that little desktop tank at work that's not bright enough to grow anything. And yeah, that's about all we've done. So I wish I could tell you more about that. I know that Tom in Provo has talked to us a little bit about LED lighting, and he has one of the Marineland aquatic plant lights, and it's LED.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he likes it quite a bit. I mean, his tank looks really nice with it. It seems to be doing really well. He's got it on CO2 and everything. And one thing is that he's not terribly thrilled about the way the timer works, because it will kick out if you lose power. It will reset to factory default settings, and it will also think it's like 3 p.m. in the afternoon,
because power only goes out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm. Every time my power goes out, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, straight up, every time.
So,
sorry, I get the sarcasm award tonight.
Okay. You can do that if you want. But I think that might be something to pursue, at least looking at that. I know that I've looked at, not purchased anything because they're outrageously expensive, but some of the other LED fixtures that you can get, they're programmable and you can change the color temperature and everything. Just, you can tell it, I want it to come out at 6,500K or 6,700K or 6,699. No, you can, because I think you can. You can change it to any color temperature you want.
That's
much.
Fancy.
I mean, within certain limits, I'm sure, but that would... Yeah, but I haven't done anything with it, and I know they cost a lot, but you might want to look into see what Marineland has... in terms of the aquatic plant lighting. I wouldn't go with a double bright because I don't think it's going to be bright enough for you. I tried growing plants with a double bright Marineland fixture.
What does a double bright mean?
It means they have a single bright LED fixture you want to see your fish, but you're not going to grow a whole lot.
Okay.
And they've got the double bright, which you can grow, like I said, in that deep tank you can grow Anubias in it. In a shallower tank you could probably grow a few more things, but I don't think it's...
It's not really heavy intended.
What I found is growth. When I tried to grow plants with it, is that we got more algae than we would with other lights. So I switched it out. I had it over this 20-gallon high for a while, and it was just kind of none of the plants were doing that well anymore with it, and so I switched it out, put it on the goldfish over the Anubias, which does fine, and put the Power Compact Fluorescent back on there, which we've now replaced. So, anyway, I would look into that one, the Marineland Aquatic Plant Lights.
And if anybody else has any suggestions, feel free to send them in.
We would definitely welcome them, and I'm sure Matt would too. So thank you, Matt.
Yep, nice to hear from you again, Matt.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're hearing from Zach.
And Jeremiah, right?
And, yeah.
Yes. Well,
which one do you want to do first?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, Zach in Georgia, assuming that is how you pronounce it, and I'm not, like, making him cringe every time I say it. He says, hi, first of all, let me say I've been listening to your podcast for a while now, and I really enjoy it.
Yay.
Thank you. There's a lot of great information, and at least 50% of everything I know about keeping aquariums is from this podcast and others like it.
Wow.
That's cool.
Well, we're glad that we could contribute.
He says, so I'm moving soon, and I have 3 tanks that need to be transported to the new house. The first of the 3 tanks is a desktop aquarium of 2 gallons with 1 male dragon scale betta, so hopefully other than heating, that one should not be such a big deal. The next one is a 10-gallon standard aquarium with 9 neon tetra. Would it be better to move the tetra in 1 large container as a group, or to split them up into groups of 3s to save space? Also, I read that you should do a 75% water change the day before you move them to reduce stress on the fish, but it would seem to me that it would cause more stress with them adjusting to the new water conditions while being moved. The last of the 3 tanks is a 30-gallon bowfront with 2 very large goldfish that I've had for almost 2 years now, so I need a very large container to move them in. Any suggestions? And how, if I need to at all, would I move the remaining tank water to the new house without it getting all over everything in the moving van? I'm just going to read all the way through, and then we'll go back and do each question. Mm-hmm. And lastly, what should I do about heating the fish during the move? It's going to be a 50-minute-plus ride to the new house, and I don't want my betta or neon tetra to die. I'm not worried about my goldfish because they're cold water fish anyway. Thank you in advance for your help, and keep making the podcast. I think I can speak for everyone when I say we all love the show. Bye for now.
Well, thank you, Zach. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the world of Aquarimax contributors.
Yes.
And let's see.
Okay, let's go back to the first. Mm-hmm. So, first of the 3, 2-gallon with a betta in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, assuming this one is a cycled tank, a little tricky with the small ones to keep them cycled, but can be done. The heating, I think, is the least of your worries with the weather.
He lives in Georgia. Seems like it'd September, be plenty
warm. I think you probably warm enough. You might actually have worries about keeping them cool enough. But I honestly wouldn't worry about heating right now unless you're going through a cold snap or something for that period of time. I mean, if you're only going to be about an hour, then I wouldn't worry about it too much. But
assuming that it's like within the next few weeks or a month, you know.
Right. And if you're thinking about doing this in December, I mean, it gets cold in Georgia too. Mm-hmm. Not as cold as it gets here, but it gets cold. So that might be something to worry about, but assuming you're doing it soon, I wouldn't worry about it a lot. But I would say you might want to get or use a cooler, whether that's going to the dollar store and getting a styrofoam cooler that you can put your neons and betta in separate bags, of course, or if you already have a cooler that you can use, that can sometimes be a good way to prevent issues. Just have them in the cooler, or if you have
something insulated,
or insulate a box with a layer of the polystyrene
you can go to like Home Depot or the hardware store and buy a sheet
cut it to fit a box for $250 or something,
and you just cut dollars. It to line the box, and then it's like a little cooler.
That's what I do to ship Daphnia a lot during the seasons when I need to worry about temperature. So that might be something to think about. And then if it gets a little warm or a little cool, the styrofoam will help. Mm-hmm. But anything that insulates would help a lot. You definitely, of course, don't want to overheat them. I mean, if they get in the sun or something like that would be bad.
I have the question he didn't say in here. I mean, he was talking about the moving van, but are you only driving the moving van Or is there also a car?
Right.
That's going. Because I wouldn't put the fish in the van.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
I mean, if you're only driving that one, you could have them in the cab of the van with you, but I wouldn't put them in, like, the big cargo space of the moving van.
Right. That's a good point. That's typically what we do when we move fish. We'll put the tanks in the back of the car, and then we'll have the box or styrofoam cooler or whatever it happens to be that we've got the fish in. Hopefully people are holding them in their laps. That's typically what we do.
Although if they're in a bag in the cooler, they're where the bag fits, you know,
snugly,
then they'll stay upright too, and that will work.
And that will be fine as well. Sometimes we do that too, depending on how many things we're moving at the same time. So yeah, so I think the bed is going to be the easiest one. You can just bag him up. Make sure he has a lot more air than water. You want about 20 to 25, maybe 30% of the bag to be water, and the rest of it to be air, so that he can breathe and not worry about it. The bettas, you mentioned splitting them up.
The neons.
The neons. Sorry, I said bettas. I totally did. I would probably split them up into two groups, but not necessarily three. I don't think it would matter. You could do three, but you could just do four and five or something in two different bags. That would be all right. And I think the idea of the 75% water change, it depends on what facilities you have for water changes. Because if you could do that with water of the proper temperature, it's already been outgassed.
It's like aged water?
Yeah, basically. If it's already aged, dechlorinated, temperature's equalized, and it's doesn't have any extra, you know, not super saturated with gases, then it would probably be great, especially if you get down and do some gravel washing. But if you don't have that possibility, it probably is too stressful. And then, let's see, you have the goldfish in there too. So I probably honestly wouldn't bother with the 75% water change the day before you move them, because you're going to be doing water change when you move anyway. And then let's see. You said that the goldfish, are you worried about those because they're large? And how large are they? I'm wondering. I mean, a 30-gallon Bowfront. Are we talking 6-inch goldfish? Are we talking bigger than that? What are we looking at? And are we talking like heavy-bodied goldfish, like red caparandas or ryukins? Are we talking about shubunkins or comets? Which kind? That might be useful to know also. But we can still talk a little about what we want to do. I would probably go with a bucket. Like a bucket you can get at Home Depot with a lid that's sealed.
Like a 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah, 5-gallon bucket or even a 10-gallon bucket. And put, you know, 5 or 6 gallons of water in the bucket, depending on how big it is. And then something that I've done in the past, not my idea, but I've done it, is you get some, like a Ziploc style bag, and kind of inflate it partially and put it on top of the water so that, not so that it seals, because you still want there to be, you know, surface of the water in contact with the air, but kind of as a, almost like a balloon that just floats on part of the top
so it doesn't splash around. So it makes static to keep the water tension there so it doesn't...
It's just if...
I mean, obviously it's just taking up space, but it seems like the plastic would also generate some static electricity.
It might.
I don't even know if that would be useful. That's just what came in my head.
Okay, well, I don't...
Sorry, I'll let you talk about science-y stuff.
Okay. Basically, you don't want to cover up a lot of the water surface, but if you blow the bag up enough, it kind of becomes more pillow-like, and then when it rests on top of the water, not a lot of it is against the surface of the water, so there's still a lot of surface of the water that's in contact with the air, but essentially, if you rest that on top and then put the lid on, when it splashes around, it kind of acts as a buffer and doesn't make it splash as much.
It's a good idea.
And so that's a possibility. Since it's going to be a fairly short trip anyway, I don't think you'd have to worry about them running out of oxygen, but that could help keep things from splashing as much. And you, of course, you put the lid on too for such a small trip. And then in terms of moving the tank water, well, let's talk about that for a minute. You can move tank water in buckets that you seal, or in, you know, 55-gallon drum or anything, something like that. But there are a lot of problems with doing that one. It's extremely heavy, and
can get messy.
It can spill and get messy. There's some things we have when we've moved tanks, moved water too, a couple of times in buckets like that. Like when we moved our goldfish in our 37 gallon high, I think what we did, brought them in a bucket, a 10 gallon bucket. We had maybe 5 or 7 gallons of water in it. And we put in new water that we dechlorinated as we added it with our Python from the sink and just filled it up and let it run, but we didn't fill it up all the way. We just filled it up maybe, I think we filled it up halfway, and then we let it run for a while to get the water moving so that some of the outgassing could happen, and we let that run for about an hour or so, and then that helped with the outgassing. The worst of the outgassing was over, and then we poured most of the water that they shipped in, which was from the tank that they came in, into that as well, and then we put them in a bag and floated them, and then put them in the tank, and then filled up the rest of the water, which wasn't very much. It was like 25% or something by that time, and so it wasn't so bad. So they didn't have the gas bubbly problem. And that worked okay. Wasn't a big problem. But the whole thing about moving without water is that then you have to do this thing where you fill up the tank with fresh water and you have to outgas it. And I would say it's better to keep your fish in bags for a little longer and let the water outgas for a little while than it is to not, which I would say the best thing to do is before you move, don't feed your fish for a few days. Like 2 or 3 days, don't feed them at all. So that their digestive systems are purged, so they're not producing a lot of waste into the water. And so then by the time you're doing this, you're not worrying about all that as much. They can stay in the bag a little bit longer. You can open up the bag and give them new air if you need to or whatever. But once you've put the water in, try to put it in the right temperature, dechlorinate it and everything. Run the filters on that water for an hour or two if you can, and then put the fish into float. And that's what we've done on occasion. Usually if you've purged the fish, not had them eat anything for a few days, then they can survive that long in the bag and it's not so bad because they're in a protected environment in your house, climate controlled, that kind of stuff. It's not any different really from shipping a fish. That you can ship a fish for, you know, overnight or 2 or 3 days, and they're usually fine if you do it right. So it's very similar to that. So that's something I would consider doing, because you really don't want to put them in water that has just come out of the tap, even if the temperature's right and it's been dechlorinated, because that gas bubble disease can really mess them up.
Okay, I have a question. Mm-hmm. I have two things. Seems like we did an episode on moving, or partly dedicated to moving, but I don't remember what number it is. Do you remember what number it was?
I don't, but search might bring that up.
My other question is, how do you feel about bag buddies for a move that is that long?
I wouldn't use them.
You don't need them for that long? That nope. Short?
No, you don't.
Okay.
I think as long as you're purging the fish so that they're pretty clean, you don't need to worry about it.
Okay.
In fact, I don't usually use bag buddies anymore. I used to.
You don't like them anymore?
But it's not that I don't like them. I mean, they have their place.
You just don't
but
use them.
I just don't think they're necessary for most situations, as long as, you know. If the last time I used them really to ship fish was when we did from Hawaii, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long time. I think, you know, they're okay for what they're supposed to do, but it's not necessarily something I would do now. So.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a good question.
Those were just my questions.
Okay, well, I hope that kind of helps. You're certainly welcome to contact us again with follow-up questions. We like those. So, hopefully that helps.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so, last thing for today, we have a video from Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And he had previously sent us a video of his dirted tank, and he sent us an update video.
Yep. In the old one, he had mentioned that he was having problems, the earlier video, I should say, he was having problems with Vallisneria not doing so well. And he was wondering if it had to do with the lighting, or if it had to do with the water changes, or if the guppies were chewing on it too much, or if it was basically a battle between the crypts and the Velisneria.
And what did he determine?
Well, he wasn't sure, but he ended up switching the light. And in the video he mentions that he switched the light, and that there was a visible difference once he had switched the light. It could have to do with the different color temperature of the bulb. It could also have to do with possibly the fact that the bulb was dimmer. Because, fluorescent bulbs diminish over time so that you're getting about 10% of the light out.
Even if it's not actually burnt out.
Right. But a lot of times, much of that is not visible to the human eye, but some of it is. I mean, you can tell the difference between a really bright one and a not so bright one, but we can't see a 90% difference. Mm-hmm. But there is a 90% difference in light output, but we might see, a smaller proportion than that, but we can still tell. So anyway, and it is a fairly deep tank. So right. That's something to consider too. A deep tank like that, you need to have some pretty strong light to get down far enough to do anything.
So what does he have in there right now?
He's mostly got crypts. He put some...
So he took the valves out.
I don't remember if he put the valves out or they're just kind of dying out and there are a couple left in there. It kind of looked like, from what I remember, there was a couple in there.
Okay.
Or there were a couple in there, I should say. And it seemed like he had put some new crypts in, some spiralis, I think. Or spiralis, mm-hmm. or however you want to say it. That's the species name that he had added in. And he mentioned in the video an interesting thing. He said that, most of the time the advice is to put tall plants in the back and get them shorter as they come towards the front of the tank. And he said mostly he just wants to do tall plants all the way across, which is a cool effect.
Yeah, it's just different. I remember also in his other video, I like the aquascaping. I like how he's got it set up in the middle. They look just like big, tall cliffs.
Yeah, there's sort of a stately effect to the and that feeling of height.
Looks nice.
It does. Looks really cool. And I think adding that, the fact that he has high plants almost all the way to the front. He said he's going to add some small Anubias up in the front.
In the very front.
In the very front. But anyway, it kind of reminds me of those valleys we'd drive over when we lived in Hawaii. The deep valleys.
Oh, yeah.
On the highway, and you'd see the trees, kind of making a little canopy down there over the valleys. That's what it reminds me of. Hmm. Like, we were on the mountains, driving, and look down into those valleys and see the trees coming up pretty high. That's the effect it reminds me of. So, anyway, it looks cool. And
we'll put it up so everybody can see it.
Yeah, we'll put the link to it so that everybody can see it. It's on Facebook, right? That's where we posted it?
Yeah, but it was in a message, so I don't think anybody else can see it. We need to...
Oh. Okay, well, if we can put it up, we will.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's tricky to do that kind of stuff, but we're going to try, just like we're going to try with Sean's, his update on his tank. Right. We're having trouble accessing it, but we'll see what we can do. So, I think that's about it for now, right?
I think that's everything.
Yeah, it was cool to see the tank, and hopefully it... turns out well, and the new light will help. I can't remember if we talked about dosing that tank or not.
I don't remember.
I think we talked about CO2, and he was thinking I didn't want to do CO2. And you know what's cool? Oh, maybe I can't talk about that yet. Never mind.
What?
What? Oh, no, it's kind of a secret. Until later. It relates to CO2, but I can't say anything yet. I don't think.
When I was a little kid... I had a younger sister. Well, I still have a younger sister, except neither of us are little kids anymore. But when my younger sister and I were kids, and we'd be thinking about, what should we play? And she would always say, I have a great idea! And I would say, what? And she would say, oh, never mind, you wouldn't like it. And I would want to smack my head against the wall every time.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. It's just, I have to wait until something happens first before I can talk about it.
Okay, fine.
But I will... as soon as
we'll just have to be patient.
Yeah, but anyway, it relates to CO2, so there you go.
Okay.
Because I think in that tank it might be a good idea to supplement it, but I know, if I remember correctly, he didn't want to do it yourself yeast reactor CO2.
Because it's a stinky!
It can be very stinky, and I was also wondering if he was doing Flourish Excel, C-Chem Flourish Excel. the
okay.
supplemental carbon liquid. But anyway, we'll have to see what he says and how it goes in the next little while. So thank you to all of our contributors today, new and returning. And until next time, may the fish
be with you.